10:9. Have we done 10:9 before? He who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his way will be found out. Sound like anybody you know that just confessed to Oprah for 10:9? We're going to do it now. In light of my many people's fallen hero last night, anybody watch the Lance Armstrong interview with Oprah or catch wind of it, read the news? Not good. Not good if you're Lance. It brought this to mind. So long story short, Lance started doping basically back in 1995 and admitted to everything last night. So for those of you guys that are in the know, EPO, which is like a blood-boosting deal for kidney dialysis patients that can be used for performance athletes or endurance athletes, testosterone, human growth hormone, blood transfusions, corticosteroids. I mean, the list is like endless. So like we're 45 seconds into the interview and he's already confessed to all this. And it's a two-night deal. Last night was two hours. It's like a 3.5-hour interview with Oprah. And it was just, and then he's got to explain how he, for, you know, the better part of 20 years, lived this lie, right? Of suing people that had said he was guilty or that he had doped or they had seen him doped or heard him doped or think he doped, and he would sue them and get money from them. There's an organization in Texas that basically signed a, you know, like when you go play like a hole-in-one tournament and if you get a hole-in-one, you get that car. There's basically an insurance company that sponsors it and says, odds are you pay us $4,000 and we'll give you a $30,000 car and we're willing to play those odds. So we may lose 30, but we're probably going to get four. Well, there was an insurance company that bet on Lance that he couldn't win X amount of tours in a row. And then Lance's team basically paid them $400,000 and he won, if he won the first tour, like $2 million, then $4 million, then $8 million. And then, so they ended up writing him a check for millions and millions of dollars every year that he continued to win. Well, they came back and said, we're suing you because we think you doped. Well, he countersued them and won. And now they're countersuing him back because they're finding out that he's a liar. So anyway, he is in deep gimshi, to say the least. So it's up to his eyeballs. So he's finally come clean and said that he's done it. It was an interesting interview. So if you care about that stuff, it's worth watching. But it reminded me of this proverb. And you watch this guy who's on camera realizing he's lied so many times, he's got to figure out, what can I say without perjuring myself? Because if I say this, I'm going to go to jail. If I say this, this company's going to sue me. So he has to be super vague and generic and not talk about other people and not slander folks. It was painfully obvious that he had been coached by lawyers and all this stuff as to what he can and cannot say at the end of a 20-plus year cycling career. All of it was a farce. And it reminded me of, he who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will be found out. And one of the questions Oprah asked him was, did you ever think that we'd be here? Like, did you not somewhere in the back of your mind think that one day you would get found out? And he said, no, I thought I had it all covered up. So turn to Proverbs 3, 23 and 24. Read that.
Then you will walk on your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. If you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet.
Just the idea is that when you live a life of integrity, your life is sweet. You put your head down at the end of the night, and you don't have to worry about, what did I tell person A? What lie am I having to live with them? And who's person A going to talk to? Well, they may talk to person B, so I've got to control that situation and remember the lie that I told them. And then there's an alternate reality of the universe that I really do live in. That's not this lie that I'm trying to live. Just a crazy mess that this guy's gotten himself into. And it just reminded me, when we as believers walk in integrity and live lives of integrity and are just open, it makes life so much easier. So a good lesson from a fool that we can all learn, who lived his life the wrong way, who's done a lot of things right in terms of you know, some great stuff long term, but walk in integrity. That word integrity comes from the word integer, which means one. There's one truth. There's one life. There's oneness to everything that you do. There's not a public and a private. There's not a what I live in, you know, behind closed doors and then what I try to present to everybody else. There's oneness in our lives. And I think that's what the gospel and ultimately Christ calls us to is integrity and oneness in our lives. All right. So there's a great lesson as Solomon would learn from someone that is not so wise. But I think we as astute Bible students can learn lessons from those that aren't as wise as us as well. Hopefully. Thoughts, commentary on that? Mike's rantings. Integrity, Lance, and otherwise, yes, sure. We'll take them all. Says a lot. All right. Yeah. And that's the weird thing. You look at a guy like David, you look at just other people that live this world, you take a step into it thinking, it's not that big a deal. And it always drags you in. Is it Swindoll? Someone find it. It's a phenomenal quote, but it talks about the idea that sin takes you deeper than you want to go, makes you stay longer than you want to stay. He says it much more eloquently than that. But it's always deceptive in its depth, in its length, and in its consequences. You think it's simple. Well, he takes steroids one time in 1995 and wins a race. He's like, huh, those worked. Maybe I'll take them again. Another win. Ooh, sponsors are now coming because we're winning races. Here's a bigger check. Hey, here's more and better athletes. Okay, well, that check came on results of wins. Now we have to maintain that. Wow, there's this new drug. I should try this and this. Now what happens? Oh, now the team is doing better and we're getting more notoriety and we're building and building and building. And now that image that he started, he can't let go of. So he has to live this lie. And the sad part of watching that and seeing that was you made that choice to step into that. I mean, you opened that door and walked through it in your own volition, but you're stuck. You cannot undo that because now you're getting teammates fired, sponsors are losing, hundreds of people are losing their jobs. I mean, it's no longer just this simple thing that's just between this private matter between me and me, right? It affects everybody. And that's the nuance of it that you don't see. So and as frustrated as I was hearing it, part of me was just sad. I'm like, man, what a sad reality to live in that you've lied to everybody. Like, his mom doesn't know. You know, it's just like, oh. So there you go. Sleep good at night. Live one life. Cool? All right, Leviticus. All right, so 16. We finished. So let's pick up kind of there and we'll roll through the rest of it. Did I bring my chart? Let's see if Michael is smart.
Yay.
Go off me. Want to see the chart of Leviticus?
Look, can I see it? It's private.
All right. Let me pray for us. I'm punchy this morning. Pray and we'll jive back in. God, thanks for this morning. Thank you for a chance to study your word. God, pray for just your grace on us as we continue to look at your scriptures and as we look at a section of scripture that we don't often navigate. Pray, God, that your truths and the things that you have communicated to the Israelites through Moses would be continued guidance and support and direction and encouragement for us. So use this time this morning, we pray. In Christ's name, amen. All right, so 1 through 7, offerings. 8 through 10, tabernacle, priesthood, something like that, okay? 11 through 15, clean, unclean, all right? Okay, good. 16, Day of Atonement, okay? All right, so that's what we built so far, okay? Now, let's start reading some more. Let's figure out kind of what's happening here. 17 is kind of going to be, well, let's read it and figure out kind of how it fits, all right? You're going to see more of the same. The official Day of Atonement is passed in the sense that they've done what they're going to do, but that's the idea, okay? So 17, 2, speak to the sons of Israel. Okay, this is what the Lord has commanded them. Verse 3, any man from the house of Israel who slaughters an ox or a lamb or a goat in the camp, or who slaughters it outside the camp and has not brought it to the doorway of the tent of meeting to present it as an offering to the Lord, blood guiltness is to be reckoned to that man. He has shed blood, and that man will be cut off from his people. So what is God instituting here? What is he saying about the sacrificial system? What does it mean to offer it outside the camp or to not bring it to the tent of meeting? Yeah, why would God do it that way? What's the purpose of that? Okay. Right. Okay. Who's not involved in the process if they don't bring it to the tabernacle? The priest. And the priest is what? The mediator between who? God and man. So what is God saying? You need a mediator. You have to have a go-between, okay? We today still have a mediator, right? That mediator has torn the veil and has given us complete and full access to God, so we don't need to go sit in a confessional booth, and confess through a priest. We have a priest, but there is a mediator. You don't have the right to approach God in your sin without a mediator, okay? That's Old Testament what the priest was for. New Testament, that system is done away with, and we have that mediator, okay? So there's not just a reckless, I blew it, even with a good heart, I'm going to go offer a sin offering, on my back porch and then throw it on the, on the barbecue. Doesn't work that way, okay? So that's the idea. So the priest has to be a part of that, okay? Verse 7 is an odd one. Read this.
So they shall no more sacrifice their sacrifices to goat demons, after whom they whore.
Or play the harlot, mine says, okay? Permanent statute throughout their generations, okay? Why would God say, hey, when you sacrifice animals, don't offer them to the goat demons, to which they play the harlot? What would that be in reference to? Who would be doing that sort of thing? Pagan nations, okay? You're going to see some stuff in 18 that's going to make you want to vomit when we read why God has to write down some of these laws, okay? So he's saying, hey, there's some practices that you've observed, possibly even picked up and participated in. We're not doing those, okay? So 17 is kind of more of those things. Verse 10 and following talks about, hey, no eating blood, okay? Any man from the house of Israel or from the aliens who sojourn among them who eats any blood, I will set my face against that person who eats blood, okay? So sushi, very bad. That's my take on it. Tastes terrible anyway. So idea of verse 11, for the life of the flesh is in the blood. I have given it to you on the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood by reason of that of the life that makes atonement. Okay, so that blood symbol is very important to God. So he says, man, you can't eat something without cooking it first, or don't eat it with the blood in it, or don't be drinking blood, or those type of things that would have been common pagan practices. Okay, verse 14, for as for the life of all flesh, the blood is identified with its life. Okay, so it's an atonement for sin, and it's a picture of the life of that animal and all people, so no dealing with the blood. Okay, so that's God's rule. And apparently that wasn't the case amongst other nations. Okay? So, more kind of ideas, exaltation, a bit of the priesthood, and some parameters around how they're going to do some future sacrifices and such. Okay? So that's 17. All right? 18, we're going to take a bit more of a turn. Okay? Look at verse 2 and 3. Read that. Okay, so starts out, bookmarker or bookend one, I'm going to give you some laws. Don't do the things that have been done in Egypt or in the land of Canaan, okay? Flip to verse 27 and 28 and read this. Mm-hmm.
For the people of the land who were before you did all of these abominations so that the land became unclean. Lest the land vomit you out when you make it unclean, as it vomited out the nation that was before you.
All right, so what we're about to see sandwiched in between these two verses is a whole bunch of stuff that God says, don't do this. Egyptians did it. Canaanites did it. Everyone that was here before you did it, and I vomited them out of the land. Okay, so these laws that we're about to read aren't like hypothetical, like, hey, don't do this just in case you think about it. It's like, no, 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 these things have been done, so don't do them. You've seen them, and this is part of their pagan worship practice. Okay, so keep that in mind. Not a fun chapter. Okay, verse 5. Let's pick up there. I'm sorry, let's do 6. Okay, sorry to be graphic, but what does uncover nakedness mean? Does anyone have a different translation for that? Okay, sexual relationships. So, no sexual relationships with relatives, okay? Verse 6 says relatives. Verse 7 says your mom. Verse 8 says your stepmom. Verse 9 talks about your sister, okay? So, God's saying no, okay? So, whatever Adam and Eve back in the day in terms of having to start a nation and a people group and a, you know, a world, I suppose, God has officially said, listen, there may have been a dispensation where that was necessary, but that is not proper anymore. So just in case there, and I think, again, that practice had ended a long time ago, but in the law he's saying, clearly, this is not how this works, okay? So again, in context, don't do what other nations have been doing. You don't sleep with your sister. You don't sleep with your mom. You don't sleep with your stepsister. And it kind of goes through a whole list of people. Okay, unfortunately, it has to be written out in that grave of detail. Okay, how about to verse 20? We'll skip some of this stuff. Let's read that. Okay, what is that? What do we call that? Adultery, okay? So don't have adultery, okay? We're going to have monogamous relationships, one man, one woman for life. That is the idea, okay? 21, okay, read that. Everybody's really excited to read these chapters, I know. Sorry.
You shall not give any of your children to offer them to Molech, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord.
What does that mean? You should not offer your offspring to Molech. Yeah. Molech was that god of the, why am I blanking? One of the ites on the east side of the Jordan. Anyway, we'll study him soon. But the worship service of him was a statue with his arms out like this, and they would put basically fire on him, and they would light him up, right? And then you would offer your child to Molech and human sacrifice. That was part of their worship service. Like, that's the background from which the Israelites are coming into the land. And these people had lived there before them, and God is kicking them out to let Israel come in. Okay, so no human sacrifice. And that was a common practice in the worship specifically of Molech. So he is probably one of the most detestable gods of the pagans that you guys will encounter. More on him as we get into Israel. Okay, how about 22? What does that mean? Homosexuality. So God says that doesn't work. Okay. Now, did that end in the Old Testament? No. Where do you see it again?
Romans.
Okay. So that's God's theme from Adam and Eve here in the New Testament. That's always been the case. Okay. How about 23? You think about this, like, really, God? Did you had to write these things down because this is what was customary for pagan nations, okay? So are we getting a feel for this chapter? This is in your Bible, friends. So, okay, that's crazy. But this is the things that God had to say, listen, this is not okay, all right? So there you go, all right? So more odd laws, okay? 25, as a result of this, God says, the land has become defiled, therefore I have brought its punishment upon it, so the land has spewed out its inhabitants. God says, I have had enough, and I am kicking these people out that worship false gods and do immoral things. They're done. Okay, so that's 18. So more laws regarding sexuality and worship and more things for the people to observe. Okay, so there you go. Now, more on the people. Okay, 19. 19:2 would be a verse for you to ponder a little bit. Read 19:1 and 2.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to all the congregation of the people of Israel and say to them, 'You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy.'"
Why would I draw attention to that verse? Why does that sound important? If I said to you, Acts 1:8, would that ring a bell for you? What's Acts 1:8? Okay. How does it fit within the context of Acts? What would you call that verse? A theme verse, okay? 19:2. "You shall be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy." Okay? So getting a feel for the book of Leviticus. So if you had to put a word to the book of Leviticus, you would say it's about... All right? I like that. Okay? So... we've got a God that is set apart. You are to live distinct and set apart. And that's a good theme verse, I would suggest, that would end up on your charts that you're going to make. All right? So, be set apart. Don't live like everybody else. Okay? In 19, you'll see some more kind of everyday laws. Okay? Look at verse 9. See what comes to mind when we read this. 19:9.
"When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge. Neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest."
Okay, what is that about? When you reap your land, you don't get to reap the very corners. Okay, you round off the corners. You got a square piece of land and you round off the corners. What imagery comes to mind? What story in your Bible comes to mind? Ruth. Okay, what was Ruth doing? Gleaning. In somebody's field that obeyed the law and wasn't greedy, but was generous and obeyed the law and said, "I'm leaving my corners." That's the welfare system in Israel. You get to go glean in my field, okay? How could you tell how generous somebody was, by the way, if you were a farmer? How big are your corners? How much did you round them off? A little? Or did you leave a ton and say, come be in my field, right? So interesting. So, I mean, like you wore your tithe number on your forehead, right? There's my field. That's what I harvested. Look how much is left, or look how little is left. Right? That was a sign. Okay? So God gave that to Israel so that they would obey and that they would have a built-in welfare system for those that couldn't afford it themselves. Okay? How about 13? How are you to treat other people?
"You shall not oppress your neighbor to rob him. The wages of a hired servant shall not remain with you all night until the morning."
Okay? So if you hire somebody, when do you pay him? That immediately, right? You don't withhold wages from someone. If they've worked for you, you take care of them. That's the right thing to do, okay? Verse 14, keep reading that.
"You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear your God, I am the Lord."
Okay, how do, in most societies, people look at folks with physical abnormalities, be it deafness, be it you can't see? How are they looked upon? Yeah, they're handicapped, and you look down upon them, right? God says, no, we're not doing that here, okay? We're going to treat people as equal. There's going to be no, you don't put a stumbling block before them. You don't treat them in a way that is any different, okay? We're not going to do that, okay? And you're going to see why here in a second. Verse 19:18, also a very important verse. If you were to take a summary statement of the entire law, okay, all 634 commandments, one would be here, the other one would be in Deuteronomy. Okay, but this is an important one. 19:18, read that.
"You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against your sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself, for I am the Lord."
Where did you hear that quoted in the New Testament? Because remember, that's brought up in a very important story. And what do they answer? Love God, which is what? The Shema, which you guys are going to memorize in Hebrew, Deuteronomy 6:5, and love your neighbor. This is the cliff notes of the law. Okay, if you want to boil all this down into two things, love God, love your neighbor. That's the law. That's all of this stuff is. Live rightly with God, sacrifice when you blew it, okay? Live good with Him, and when you wrong your neighbor, make restitution, pay them back, fix their fence, do whatever it takes. Love God, love neighbor. That's the law, okay? And that's the law that Jesus lived by. He came to fulfill that. Love God, love neighbor. Okay, so Cliff Notes version of the law are simply two verses. Okay, Deuteronomy 6:5, the Shema. Okay, and we'll talk about that here in a bit. And love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, so odd verse 19. Read that.
You shall keep my statutes.
Statutes. Or statutes. I like that too. That sounds very like Italian. The statutes.
You shall not let your cattle breed with a different kind. You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seed, nor shall you wear a garment of cloth made of two kinds of material.
Okay, so what's that about? Okay, don't put, you know, corn and wheat together. You know, don't put two different types of seed in your field, nor wear a garment upon you of two kinds of material mixed together. Yeah, like how many of us are in this morning? Anybody got a cotton poly blend on this morning, right? I think my undershirt's got some wicking with, you know, characteristics in it. I'm pretty sure I'm in sin. What's that about?
Keeping away the things that God had made
of. Stuff like that, yeah, or the idea of purity or whatever. So God was a stickler even on some of the details of like, this is what pagans do, and you're not going to do it. And it may not make a ton of sense. Maybe some of the other stuff does, like i.e. chapter 18, like, don't have sex with your neighbor's wife. Okay, we're not doing that. You're like, okay, that makes sense. But I can't wear a cotton shirt and polyester pants. I mean, how do I go to the disco, God? That doesn't make sense at all, right? But God says, no, you're going to live distinct. And part of living distinct is looking and acting different, okay? That's what holiness is. That's what sanctification is. It's being set apart. And God says, I'm going to set you apart. And some of the things are going to make sense. Some of them maybe are a little bit like, huh? But they're to do it, okay? Because they're to live and look different. Okay, than the rest of the pagans around them. Okay, make sure you guys hear that. Israel looked different. Okay, they didn't blend in. Okay, there's some good application to that for Christians. We need to be able to engage culture, but we shouldn't look indistinct from culture. You shouldn't be able to look at a Christian and a pagan and go, I can't tell you two apart. You look the same, you act the same, you talk the same, you listen to the same music, you do everything the same. Now, there's certainly overlap that's healthy and good, right? We don't need to live up on a mountaintop and holler at people that they're sinners and live completely isolated. But we do need to be engaged to a point where we can get in their lives, but live distinct enough where people go, no, I make different moral choices than you do. I live my life differently for a purpose, okay? So, note to self, God called them to do that as well, all right? Here's some odd ones. 1927.
You shall not round off the hair on your temples or mar the edges of your beard.
Okay, anybody not have sideburns? I'm in sin, all right. Stephen, well done. Oh, no, you're done. You were doing better before, so. But yeah, so if you're a male and you're obeying the law, you got pork chops, okay? And when we go to Israel, you're going to see most of the men that are Orthodox Jews have full fat beards, okay? Because it says so right here, grow out your beards, okay? Notice what else they don't have, verse 28.
You shall not make any cuts on your body for the dead or tattoo yourselves, I'm the Lord.
Anybody got tattoos? Okay, I'm in sin, okay? So, right, they couldn't have tattoos. Or cuts on your body. We think that's some new fandangled emo whatever tradition that people have started doing, and it's awful, so I don't mean to make light of it, but that was a pagan practice back in the day, that they would literally cut their bodies for part of a, you know, remembrance of the dead, okay? So God says that's not appropriate, and nor is putting tattoos on your body. That's a great question. Man, I haven't studied that enough to give you a good answer. I know that some of the laws regarding those issues feel a little, from our vantage point, a little less than they should. Having read some other ones, like you feel like maybe there would be a bigger punishment.
Mm-hmm. And a woman who is kind of had less position in this country, mm-hmm. anyway, enslavement,
mm-hmm.
and to be just kind of had their way with her, like, seemed like that's kind of...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'd have to look into that to give you a good answer, but yeah, there's some tough laws, no two ways about it. Okay. Sorry.
I just have like a question, like, I just don't get why God would say, like, right here, like, no markings on your bodies and tattoos or anything like that, but yet he's going to allow Jesus to come back in Revelations with Lord, Lord, King, King on his thigh.
Yeah. In this context, why would that be?
Pagan religions.
Yeah, it's just live distinct. They did this, you're not going to. I don't think there's anything inherently evil about a tattoo, right? Hence, I have one. And I think the coming of Christ fulfilled the law, and we don't have to look at that and go, oh, I can't do that, right? Yeah, and Jesus is going to come back apparently tatted up, so.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting how he tells his people, yet he already knows that Jesus is coming back with tattoos.
Yeah. So what would be interesting is to go, okay, if God stepped into our society today, what would the laws look like? What would be the things that he says, listen, that's pagan. It's clearly pagan. Don't do it. Where would those lines be, right? And I think, obviously, with Christ, it obviously looks very differently. But if Jesus came in the year 4000 and we were living underneath the Old Testament law in 2013, what would those things look like? You ever thought about that? Like, what would make us distinct from the people around us, that things that were a part of a cultural thing that led people into sin and a worship of a false god. Just be interesting to ponder, okay? So, yeah, in their context, this. You know, the other thing that was part of it? Earrings. Guys, no earrings, because that was pagan, okay?
That's one thing I've noticed people, like, use as an argument to get out of things. Because I was talking to someone about and I was telling them, you know, like, I don't hate on, like, gay people, like, I'm totally fine with them, but I just don't agree with what they're doing. I'm going to do everything I can to, like, put them in the other direction. They're like, oh, yeah, well, what does the Bible say that? I'm like, well, Romans, I was like, well, that was a fad.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't care what it was, it's what the Bible said.
Right. Yeah, and it's I've heard that as well, right? So, and there's good Christians that take that theology. Well, in that day and age, it was this, and as we're moving towards, it's called trajectory theology. God was moving this way, so though he said a man should lead his wife, if everything was right and there wasn't sin, that wouldn't be necessary, so they really should be equals and it should be a 50-50 partnership, and the guy's not. It's like, well, was it or not? So, and yeah, so, boy, if that's your theology, I hope you sleep good at night, and I hope you're right. My God seems to be a little bit more clear on that, and I'm going to obey that. So, but yeah, that's one way to get around it. And if your motive is to get around it, your theology must fit into it. So, there you go. Okay. 34, read that, 1934.
You shall treat the strangers who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
Okay, so strangers, who would that be?
Foreigners.
Look different, talk different skin color. What could you not be if you're an Israelite? A racist. Okay? So, you see what God's doing. I mean, that was a part of pagan culture. He's like, no, you're not going to be racist. Why? Because you were oppressed in Israel for looking, acting, talking different. You're not going to do that to anyone else. So God says, no racism. Okay? You don't treat the poor differently. You don't treat the weak differently, the handicapped differently. None of it. Yeah, and I think to say that, man, like, Galatians, there's neither slave nor free, Jew nor Greek, male nor female, all are one in Christ Jesus, the idea, look, man, the playing field's level. So, black, white, purple, whatever, you're a sinner and you need Jesus. So, don't look down on anybody. So, yeah, that one certainly has legs in the New Testament, okay? So.
Yeah. Almost like,
yep.
Hey, if
they're coming to visit your land, don't allow them to do this.
Yep.
Let them know that they're no different from you.
Yeah. The expectation of a Ruth-like person was to say, I'm done with Moabites. Thank you. That's their god, Molech. See how the brain works? The expectation was you abandon everything, and you are welcome into the fold, into the flock of Israel, but you were to look and act and be like an Israelite. You worship as they worship. You believe what they believe, and you are full on welcome. But you don't get to keep your, you know, G.I. Joe gods on the corner and still do what you want to do with God of Israel and enjoy the blessings. That's not how it works. Okay, so yeah, God is wide open to foreigners obviously worshiping him. We see that all over. Okay. So 20, more of the same. Okay, so more laws specifically directed at the people. So 18, 19, 20, we're talking about people, laws given to them. So verse 2, more on Molech. Verse 5, Molech. Okay, kind of the theme here. Verse 6, mediums and spiritists. Okay, so witchcraft and whatever. God says, if they worship them, put them to death. Okay, so keep that in mind as we roll into the life of Saul in the New Testament. I think he's still Old Testament. Other Saul. King Saul. With God's view of mediums and sorceresses and those sorts of things. Okay. Verse 10, if there's a man who commits adultery with another man's wife, one who commits adultery with his friend's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. You think our society would look a little bit different if that was still the punishment? Great. Enjoy your adulterous relationship, and when you're done, we're going to stone both of you. You're both going to die. Okay? So, accountability. Okay? So, rest of 20, we won't get all into that, but it's more of the same. Okay? So, coming off of the Day of Atonement, 17, you get some more laws regarding, hey, this is how we're going to continue to sacrifice. This is the system. Don't blow it. 18, 19, 20 has this idea of, man, how are we going to live as Israelites? What's the idea? What's the big theme of 18, 19, and 20? You live different. Okay, so here's how you're going to make yourself distinct. This is, and not just like hypothetical, this is real. Don't sleep with that person. Don't worship that god. Don't do this action. Don't get a tattoo. Don't wear poly cotton. You know, this is how you're going to live in the real practical world that I'm putting you in. God gives them again and again and again. Our old professor in seminary used to say the greatest lesson in teaching is repetition, repetition, repetition. So I think he's drilling it in. And you're going to get him drilled in because this whole generation, what happens to this generation, by the way? They all die. And then what's God got to do with the next generation? Deuteronomy. It's the second law. It's, okay, reset, reinstruct. All of that stuff from Exodus 19, when they got the law, all the way through the stuff we're leading, he's got to reteach all of them, okay? So, fortunately, we're not all going to die, so we don't have to read it all, okay? So, that's good. But, he's just drilling it in their head. Live and act differently. And I think he's saying the importance of it by repeating it. So, yeah. In case you were sleeping that day in class, here it is again, Israel, okay? So, there you go. All right, now, 21, we're going to shift our attention away from the people to... So what else? 21:1.
The Lord said to Moses, speak to the priests, the sons of Aaron, and say to them.
Okay, who are we talking to now?
The priests.
Okay, priests. Okay, so keep that in mind. So not just, this isn't the congregation of Israel anymore, this is to the priests. Okay? Someone asked the question yesterday, is sin the same thing as being unclean? Who asked that? Somebody, okay? Here's a great example of no. Okay, read that.
What verse?
Verse 1. Keep going.
And the Lord said to Moses, speak to the priests, sons of Aaron, and say to them, don't let you make yourself unclean for the dead among his people.
What does that mean? Okay, unclean. You're going to make yourself unclean for the sake of a dead person. What would that... Well, keep reading.
Except for his closest relatives, his mother, and his father, his son, his daughter, his brother, or his virgin sister... Is near to him because she has no husband. For her, he may make himself unclean.
What does that mean? Yeah. If like some high school friend dies and you're the priest, guess what? You don't go to the funeral. You're not going to participate in that. Because why? You would become
Unclean, and then as a result of being unclean, what can you not do? Your job as a priest. You guys remember in the story of Nadab and Abihu? God says, Aaron, buddy, you don't even get to mourn. You stay in the temple and you do your job, because that is more important than you mourning for your sons. Do not put on sackcloth and ashes. You don't even leave the tabernacle. Okay, so God takes that job very seriously. Okay, so anyway, great story. Brad. So you can't defile yourself unless it's a close relative. Mom, dad, sister, okay. You get to tap out and bring in, you know, whatever other priest was in the rotation, and you got to go do that. Okay, so that's the idea. So unclean and sin, not equal. Does uncleanliness sometimes equal sin? Yes. Can uncleanliness not be sinful? Absolutely. Okay, so in this case, I'm voluntarily defiling myself to go to a funeral so I can put my relative, you know, whatever, then you're going to be unclean for a period, and then you get to come back. Okay, so that would have been the case. Okay, let's see. Verse 12, nor shall he go up, the priest, out of the sanctuary, nor profane the sanctuary of his God, for the consecration of the anointing oil is on him. I am the Lord. Okay, so you can't leave the sanctuary when you're in the midst of your duties. You don't leave. You don't get to, for whatever reason. Okay, how about 13? This is odd. What can a priest do? Can a priest have a wife? Yes. Okay. So I don't know how the Catholic Church missed that one, but there it is. Okay. There's rules on what type of wife he can have. He can't have a divorced woman or whatever. And there's a standard. He has to marry from within his clan, within his tribe. End of verse 14. But rather he is to marry a virgin of his own people. Okay. So you get to you have to marry an Israelite and preferably even a fellow Levite. Okay. That's the idea. But a priest can be married. That, God was fine with that. Okay. How about the priesthood itself? This is interesting. On the heels of God saying no racism and not treating anybody differently, here are the requirements for being a priest. Okay. Verse 17. Somebody pick up there. What does it mean to offer the bread of his God? It's basically a euphemism to say, to be a priest. Okay, you can't perform the religious duties of a priest if, verse 18.
For no one who has a blemish shall draw near, a man blind or lame, or one who has a mutilated face or a limb too long, or a man who has an injured foot or an injured hand.
All right, for sake of co-edness, we'll stop there and you guys can read the rest of 20 on your own while I'm talking. Okay, what's the idea? Yeah, like that? You're welcome. What's God doing? Why is that? Is God being? Why can you not be, you know, have a jacked up arm or a mutilated face or some type of deformity? God won't let you be a priest. What's he saying? Why? Why? Maybe. What's think pictures? What's the picture there?
They're offering animals, other things that are without blemish, and likewise the priests need to also.
Yeah, the priest is a symbol of ultimately of the priest that's going to come, perfect, without blemish, that will fulfill all of these things as our mediator. Okay, so if you had a defect of any kind, right, you could not be, you couldn't be a priest. Okay, it is. It's a weird. It's like, man, that's a high. It's a high deal. Okay. Eczema, right? That's like dry skin. Like, you know, there's some odd laws in there, okay? And they're for the picture of or the purpose of a picture, okay? So that's the idea. So they are out, okay? So more for the priest, okay? 22 as well, more on the priest, okay? How about this, verse 3, 22:3, read that. Okay, so how about if you're a priest and you do your duty while you are unclean? What does God do to you? you're dead, okay? So if you fail to offer a burnt offering on your behalf when you're unclean, before you put on your priestly garments and go to work, and you start doing the work of the ministry, you're dead, okay? God will kill you, okay? So again, it's just a great word picture of, man, your heart's got to be right first with God before you can minister to others, okay? God doesn't expect perfection, but he expects an obedient, contrite priest who says, you know what, it's been a rough week, you know, and I did miss that and the other thing, and I need to reconcile myself to God, okay? So he doesn't take that lightly. In fact, you get killed during the midst of the service. See also Nadab and Abihu, non-contrite hearts, either drunk or haphazard or whatever. God says, you're done, okay? And they got to look back on an example and go, huh, God's not messing around. He was actually serious about that because we saw two sons of Aaron die in the midst of that, okay? So there you go, all right? So 22, more on laws of the priest, okay? We won't go through all of them, all right? So 21 and 22, how would you characterize, how would you title those chapters? Priestly laws, okay? All right? 18 through 20 would have been what? We just looked at? Coming off the Day of Atonement. Say again. Yeah. Laws for the people. 21 and 22, laws for the priest. And these are practical, everyday, like reality type laws, okay? So however you want to label those, 18 through 20 are about the people, 21 through 22 specifically to the priest, okay? 23, just scan that, okay? Look at your, if you've got like paragraph headings, what's 23 about? Yeah, this is the feast and festival schedule, okay? It's the same thing you have on your Exodus chart, okay? Remember, there are three mandatory travel feast and festival feasts in Israel, okay? So if you're a male, you are required to return later on to Jerusalem where the temple was and celebrate with everybody, okay? Passover, okay, the beginning of the spring feast, you had to travel and go back, okay? Really, really big day. Weeks or Shavuot or Pentecost, okay, that you guys studied in Acts 2, that was, you know, everyone back home. And booths or Sukkot, tabernacles, okay? Those were the three, and they're all on your Exodus chart, okay? But mandatory to go back home. And more than likely, if you're a male and you're a husband and you got a wife and kids, what are your wife and kids doing? They're coming with you, right? So it's a big deal. And everybody's participating together. So, and the whole nation is worshiping, okay? So there's a very communal aspect to how God is doing that, okay? There's also a very interesting rhythm to their life. Work, stop, celebrate, worship communally with everybody. Go back to work, stop, go back, okay? So God three times a year says mandatory, minimum, we're going to do this. So every 4 months, you're going to take a break and we're going to go have a field party and worship God together and enjoy ourselves and celebrate what God's done, okay? So these three specifically were celebratory, okay? People were there, it was awesome. Not like Rosh Hashanah and the Day of Atonement, okay? So very private, very introspective, very calm. Yeah. Passover, first one in the spring, okay? Weeks or Shavuot or Pentecost, or the in Hebrew it's called Shavuot. And then the last one is booths, tabernacles, okay? When they tabernacled in the wilderness. Oh, I feel like there is in Ruth somewhere, but I don't think it's called that. Ah, that's a good question. Dang it.
Isn't Hanukkah in that, quote unquote, in the 400-year period?
Yeah.
And there was an instance where the lamp went out and then it got...
That's where it came. I think there's a reference to something that came from it, though. So there's something in there. But yes, that's the period when it came, during the Maccabean Revolt. So, yeah. So, there you go. 23, feasts and festivals, okay? 24, more kind of... laws concerning oil, bread, and blasphemy is what my title says, okay? Just, again, more laws for the people. 25 is pretty fascinating, okay? Laws concerning the Sabbath year. You guys remember the process in Israel where they said, hey, you get to work 6 years in a row, and on the seventh year, what do you do? You take a time out. What else rests? Not just you, but what else? Your land. Do you plant? No. Do you sow? No, you don't do anything, okay? As far as we know, Israel didn't obey this. If you were a farmer, why would you not obey this law? I like to eat. So God's got to provide, okay, from the sixth year.
Six, seven, and eight.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's in here, okay? It says it in 20. That's different, okay? But yeah. So verse 20 of chapter 25. But you will say, what are we going to eat on the seventh year if we do not sow or gather in our crops? Then I will order my blessings for you in the sixth year that it will bring forth the crop for 3 years. When you are sowing in the eighth year, you can still eat the old things from the crop, eating the old until the ninth year when the crop comes in. Okay? So that's the idea. Man, that's God had to provide for the sixth, seventh, and eighth year in 1 year. Okay? So that is crazy faith, right? That's shoe leather, real, like, don't pay your PG&E bill. God's going to figure it out for you. Okay, you know, I'm going to live in this apartment, I'm going to drive a car, I'm going to eat, but I'm not going to have a job. And I'm just going to trust that God said he's going to figure it out, so we will. So every 7 years, you take a year off work. That's insane, right? I mean, you see what God's asking these people to do, to live out their faith in a very practical, real way. This is a whole different level of crazy, okay? He called them to a very high standard, okay? So just think through the implications of that in your life. What would that look like? Would you obey that law? Man, I'd probably have a side job. Okay, so.
It's like being a small business owner and then God saying, don't run your business for 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Like just take a break. Shut it down. You'd be good.
We're still a little scared.
Yep. So, crazy, okay? Moreover, it's not just every 7 years they have a Sabbath year. They have a year called the Year of Jubilee, okay? Look at 25 verse 8 and 9. Read that.
You shall count 7 weeks of years, seven times 7 years. The time of the 7 weeks of years shall give you 49 years.
A lot of math to get there. Okay, but God's basically saying every 50 years, every 49 years, here's what happens. What's that mean? So every 50th year, the shofar sounds, okay, the ram's horn, and it's, what's going on here? You shall return to your own property, and each of you shall return to his own family.
Wasn't that to where if you had accrued more land, on the 50th year, everyone goes back to what they had, and if you had a slave, after the 50th year, they're free to leave.
Yep, right? Exactly, okay? And if you were a slave, you got released, right? So what is God saying? Yeah. You take the Monopoly board, you dump it on the floor, and you start over, okay? Nobody has any more property than anybody else. You don't have more pieces. You don't have more money. It's done, okay? So, doesn't it, right? There is no, yeah. I mean, by all means, buy and sell and trade in the land and be smart, but I'm not going to let you accrue billions of dollars at someone else's expense. We're wiping the board clean, okay? So good for you that you came from money. That's going away in 50 years, okay? So every generation had to hit the reset button. Yeah. So you, yeah, it's a big family reunion too. And God says it, where is it? He says it somewhere in here, in 25, I believe. He says, the land's mine. I own it. You don't owe it or own it. You're sojourners. Where is it? There it is, 23. Read 23.
The land shall not be sold into perpetuity, for the land is mine. For you are strangers and sojourners with me.
What a great perspective Israel must have had on all their stuff. How are they instructed to treat their stuff? Whose is it? It's God's. Okay? That land that you were sowing crops in, that house that you live in on that land, okay, it's all mine, okay? And in 50 years, it's going to hit the reset button. So if you acquired land from somebody else, it's going back to God because it's mine. I am letting you live there rent-free. It's my land, okay? What a great perspective, right? Cars we drive, the houses we live in, the clothes that we wear, it's God's. It's not ours. Nothing's changed, but our view on it has, right? We don't see our life that way. The paycheck that I bring home is God's. It's all His. And God says that numerous times. It's His. Okay, so just a great lesson from Israel that I think would be very appropriate for us to keep in mind. All of our stuff is not our stuff. We're borrowing it until God says, I want it back.
You said that they did obey the seventh year thing, but did they do this
one? I don't think so. Yeah, not that I know of. In fact, part of the punishment of them getting booted out of the land later, God takes it to this, and He says, for the years that you did not obey these laws, I am kicking you out of the land, okay, i.e. the end of the book of Kings, when we see Babylon and Assyria come in and spank Israel and remove them and deport them. They are out of the land for, I'm trying to remember what the math is on that. Anyway, they're basically paying for this on the back end because they didn't do it on the front end. Okay, and God reminds them of that because you failed to obey me and trust me. Okay, so as far as we know, they didn't. Great hypothetically, right? A little bit harder to say, you know what, small business owner, don't work for 3 years. Like, okay, that sounds great until I actually have to do it, right? So. That was the idea. Yeah, apparently. So they got greedy or whatever, but yeah. God said, I'll, you know, so they got to see that it would do that, I assume, because God said it would, and then they just didn't have the faith to not keep planting and reaping, and so.
It's interesting, too, being where we are in kind of our story here, they're just coming off, or actually, they're still, living off the minute.
They are still sitting at the foot of Mount Sinai. You guys remember from Exodus 19 all the way to Numbers 10? This is only 11th month, an 11-month period. Right, so they've just started this journey. So,
we kind of bash on how different are we, but it's like you should have known, you're living off mandate.
Yeah.
God is providing.
Yep. And you've got 37 and a half years left of that, right? They're 11 month into manna. Okay? So, interesting. All right. So, 23, 24, more on some of those laws. 25, you kind of get more of the same. We'll skip through a lot of this. Okay. But that's the heart from God. Okay. So that's kind of a section in terms of, you guys can kind of figure that out and put that together however you want. Okay. But a lot of this is just kind of more laws. Okay. And then 26 and 27. These are kind of some concluding remarks from God and some interesting covenant type relationship here beginning in chapter 26, okay? Look at 26 verse 3.
If you walk in my statutes and observe my commandments and do them, then I will give you your rains in their season, and the land shall yield.
Okay, so verse 3, if, verse 4, then. Okay? If you do what I've asked you to do, then you're going to get, verse 4, rains in their season. You're going to have bountiful fruit in end of verse 4. Your threshing will last until the grape gathering. Okay? Verse 6, I will also grant you peace in the land from no harmful beast and from no sword. So no enemies are going to come in. You will chase your enemies away, and they will fall before you. Verse 7, 5 of you will chase 100, and you're going to beat them. Okay, those are pretty bad odds, and you're still going to win. Verse 9, I will make you fruitful and multiply you. I will confirm my covenant with you. You will eat the old supply and clear out the old house. Moreover, I will make my dwelling among you. I will also walk, in verse 12, among you and be your God, and you shall be my people. Okay, if, then. Okay. Is that the same type of language as the Abrahamic covenant? No, this is not a unilateral covenant. This is a suzerain vassal, or it is a conditional covenant. If you obey these laws, you're going to get blessed. Okay, we see that in Exodus 24. Okay, as God brings the law for them the first time, if you do these things, you get blessed. Okay, we see it here, and we're also going to see it in Deuteronomy 28. Okay, this is the Mosaic law. It's an if-then. Okay, you live up to your end of the agreement, and I will do mine. If you don't live up to your end of the agreement, then, verse 14, but if you do not obey me and do not carry out these commandments, look at 15 all the way through 46, That's their then. That's the bad side, okay? So God gives them 1 through 13, basically, and hey, do your job. Things are going to be fantastic. 14, if you don't, all the way through 46, no bueno, okay? So obedience was expected from the people, okay? And again, obedience does not mean perfection. Obedience means live in the system, okay? Confess, repent, move on. Live with God rightly. Live with your neighbor rightly. Make restitution, okay? Just live in the system, okay? And we can work this thing out, okay? Don't harden your hearts. Don't live in disbelief. Whatever it may be, that's it, okay? So the picture of the darker side, the bad side, the disobedient side is dark, okay? It's you guys can read through it yourselves, but the rest of 26 is, man, it's ugly, okay? It's not a fun deal, okay? The idea is obedience brings blessing. Disobedience brings curses, okay? You want to experience what the Egyptians experienced? Live crazy, and you're going to get to see it. I will discipline you, okay? Because I love you. I will allow you to experience these things to get your hearts right, okay? That's what these things are for, right? As a parent, when you discipline a kid, you don't discipline a kid because you just are mad. You discipline them because you're saying, hey, I'm trying to steer you in the right direction, and these consequences that I'm giving you are to help turn your heart around, okay? So that's the idea, all right? So that's 26, and really 27 as well, okay? Disobedience brings curses. Obedience brings blessing, okay?
That character plan, like, today is difficult to communicate.
Yeah.
Because I've been in that situation before where it's like someone has straight up told a friend that's going through a really hard time or has made choices and then it's just gotten worse. Like, she's been told or has been told this is, like, the discipline of God. Like,
right.
You're doing it because of it, and then that's, like...
Right. Dangerous.
Dangerous.
Yeah, you have cancer because you're in sin.
Like, yeah.
Wait a second. Now, let me play devil's advocate on that, okay? That advice drives me crazy, and I'm with you, okay? When people make those blanket statements of, you know, the reason this is happening to you is because God is disciplining you and you're in sin or something like that, okay? Is that a possibility? Yeah, it is, okay? And it's something that you need to ask personally, okay? If things are going screwball in your life, you know, downhill in a hurry, it's worth asking the question, God, are you trying to teach me something in this? Is there something going on within me that I'm not seeing? Is there a blind spot that I'm not aware of? Is there a hardened heart in the midst of my life as to why you would be doing this? It's a fair question to ask. Now, to blanket statement that and say, every time you see sin, it's because, or every time you see consequences, it's because of sin, that's horrible theology, okay? So be careful with that. And I think you guys understand that, you know, you don't speak into someone's life that way and say, I see this, so there must be hidden sin in your life, okay? It's a possibility, okay? You need to be really careful as to how you communicate that to other people. But for us personally, man, that is a question that we, I think, should always ask in the process of sin. God, what are you doing? Or in the process of physical, external, like, consequences or difficulty or whatever, right? And I think the opposite is also true, right? Be careful with the flip side, okay? When we read Samson's story, this guy is blessed to the nines. But what's going on inside of him? Samson's jacked. I mean, you talk about just like a high-handed, fist in the air, rebellious spirit to God, that's Samson. But what's his life look like? Looks like a bowl of cherries. God's blessing him. Everything's good. It's scary. So be careful not to equate those, okay? God sometimes blesses idiots and curses guys that are walking with him and gals, okay? And sometimes he'll do the opposite. So it's always good to ask those questions and to have enough of a theological grid to go, you know what, that's bad advice. I don't need to listen to that, or I don't need to give that, or whatever it may be, okay? So you got to weigh that yourselves and trust people, but those are great questions to ask in the midst of whatever's going on, okay? So don't get comfortable because life's going well and think God must be really happy with me, and don't beat yourself up and think, oh, God hates me because I lost my job or whatever, okay? Unfortunately, those things happen, and sometimes it's for different reasons.
I have a personal story about that. My uncle died at, like, 34 or so, from
a car wreck.
Wow. And he was on the board of directors, and my family was just like, why did he die? Like, you got, you know, so it's like, sometimes there's, I think there are mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
question is what gets us in trouble. What's the wrong question? I've heard necessarily it's the wrong question to ask sometimes. And that if there are no answers, then we just ask the what. What are you teaching or looking at? How can we draw in the view and talk to
Yeah. Deuteronomy 29:29. A lot of you have probably heard this or memorized it or what have you. At the end of the giving of the law, when God's trying to talk about his nature and all the things that can potentially happen, he says as much, okay? The secret things belong to the Lord your God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our sons forever that we may observe all the words of this law. God's going to do stuff that we cannot figure out. And he says as much. Man, there are secret things that belong to me, and they would make your head explode. So walk with me, do what you know to do, live rightly, but there are things that are just beyond our knowledge. And to try to explain those, to try to explain the why, can sometimes be really dangerous, okay? And those are good times to go back to the heart and the character of God. But yeah, that's tough. And there's not an answer for that. Why did that guy die? No idea. So can God bring great things out of an awful situation? Absolutely. We've...
It wasn't perfect, though. At first,
right.
Everyone dealt with it differently.
Yeah.
And I saw my dad treat my uncle like he was just...
Yep.
And then it took a few years, and then we were just like, no, this is silly. Just like...
Yeah. That's good. Okay. So keep those in mind. It is, there's some difficult things in that you'll get to experience as we roll through stuff like that. All right. So enjoy. Okay. All right. And then we'll finish up just with 27, more of the same. Okay. So you're going to get more above and beyond laws. Is there anything that I wanted to touch on? Yeah. Okay. So you guys can kind of plow through some of the rest of that stuff, but there's more blessing and cursings, more do this, don't do that, okay? So it's kind of the theme of 26 carries on of disobedience and what that brings, okay? So there's Leviticus, friends. You guys got it, all right? So here's what I want from you. I want a chart, okay? I want you guys to put one together, and I want you to be able to, in a chart, the purpose of this is for you to go, okay, I want to see the big picture, okay? So you don't need to write down the names of Aaron's fourth son or whatever, but you need to be able to see the big picture breakdowns of the book that we talked about, okay? You need to, like we've done with Genesis, say, this is the theme of Leviticus. This is how I see it. It doesn't have to be the one we've talked about. If you see it differently and are going to teach it differently, there's other ways to do it, okay? And if you see the breakdowns of the book differently, that's okay. You just need to be able to walk through and say, this is about this. This section is about that. This is how the book works. This is the movement. This is what's going on, okay? And you need to write down things that will be important, okay? So if you were to teach the book of Leviticus in 10 minutes, what are the things that you put on a chart? That's what you're looking for, okay? Who's the author? What are these sections about? You can't drill down into this little minute law and detail and don't wear cotton poly blend, okay? That's not important when you're teaching it that quickly. But this is going to help you see the big picture, okay? And you go, oh yeah, chapters 1 through whatever about that. And that's about that, okay? Make sense? You guys have Shabbat on the table, correct? Ooh, remind me to tell you about that before we're done, okay?
2 weeks.
Is 2 weeks enough?
2 months.
Not 2 months.
Before you go to Israel.
It will definitely be due before you go to Israel, I can guarantee that. Yes. Today's the 18th. Do you guys have any other assignments right now? What's going on with Tuesdays? You have any other lingering book reports or whatever that are like?
We have a book at the end of the month.
End of the month?
Or what is it? February.
Okay. I'll give you guys to the 8th. 3 weeks, okay? I'm looking for something like that, okay? This isn't like super detailed, right? I would highly recommend that you do it on the computer, okay? So you have it and you can... You're going to look at it later and go, why did I do that? That's wrong. So you're going to want to be able to change it. So any of you Mac heads out there, OmniGraffle is probably the best charting program I've seen. Rick does all this stuff in Excel, so it's a little bit more difficult to work with. But there's some really good, simple stuff that you can use. Okay, so
Okay, but make it yours, make it unique. It doesn't have to be on a piece of paper. However you guys want to do it, please, if you're creative and a right-brained and want to make it, do it, okay? So just make sure that it's something that if you were to sit across the table from someone and they say, can you explain Leviticus to me? I don't get it. You go, yeah, boom, 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 boom. Here you go. And then you can hand it to someone and say, there's Leviticus, okay? So, cool, make sense? So, big picture, I want a theme, I want a word that says this is Leviticus. If there's a theme verse that goes with that, that'd be good to include. Big picture chapter breakdowns, and then some details of each one of those sections. What's it about, okay? Things like that, all right? So take a look at your... Yeah, section breakdowns more so than chapters, okay? But, like, if I was going to say chapters 1 through 7 are about offerings, I would say chapter 1 is about a burnt offering. Okay, chapter 2 is about a sin offering. Chapter 3 is about a guilt offering. All right? Dang it, not even close. Okay, see? That's why I have a chart. I don't have to remember any of that. I have it right here in my handy-dandy chart. Okay, so those are, that's why. Okay? So, there you go. See? Small brain, good chart.
What about Shabbat?
Yeah. Shabbat. Old residents actually like you guys, which is amazing. They are going to come in Thursday and cook all of you breakfast, okay? So, I know, it's a big deal, okay? Right? You guys are like the pledges, and they're cooking you breakfast, okay? I know, but they like each other, and they all want to get back together anyway, and they miss getting up at 4:30 in the morning, so crazy, I know. No, not so much. That's a lie that I tell myself, Chad. They're going to come Thursday morning, cook breakfast, so make sure Thursday morning crew that you're here at 5:30 to let them in, okay, because we took their keys back, so they can't get in without you here. They'll make breakfast. We'll hang out and just eat for a little bit. I've asked them to put together a Shabbat that they can invite you guys to, okay? So I didn't hear back on that, but I'm hoping that they will have one to say, hey, if you want to be included in your Shabbat assignment in our Shabbat, then we can all Shabbat together, okay? We can Shabbating, so yes. Maybe not that. Okay? Go. Yes. One morning. All right, so that's next Thursday, okay? So just make sure you're ready.
Is it 25th on Friday? Is that next Friday? Yeah. Me and Alex are having Shabbat in my house.
Week.
We've done it once, so you're not
good. You are experts. There you go. Cool? All right. Numbers, come on. We can get through 10 chapters right now. Let's go. Ready? Yeah, the year of Jubilee. It's biblical.
Reset.
All right. Numbers. All right. Here's numbers breakdown. You guys ready? Theme of numbers. Turn your page, write down the word numbers. Okay? Chastening. Okay? This is God's, put your hand on the chalkboard, and I'm getting out the paddle. Okay? Chastening. He's about to teach Israel some lessons. And because of their disobedience that's coming, that's what's coming for them, okay? Chastening, with a C. C-H-A-S-T-E-N-I-N-G, to chasten, discipline, okay? Chastening, all right? Discipline, same thing, okay? Three big picture breakdowns for numbers, okay? 36 chapters. Chapters 1 through 10 are preparation, okay? We're going to read about how they camp. We're going to read about what tribe sits where and the whatever, how many, okay? This is all preparation for them to get ready to move, all right? So we've got at least 1.2 million, maybe 3 million people that have to travel in the wilderness together. God is creating order, okay? So 1 through 10 is all about preparation, okay? 11 through 25 is the old generation, okay? The generation that just got all the laws that we read about in Leviticus, okay? We're going to find out what happens to that generation. 11 through 25, old generation. So that would mean 26 through 36 is about the new generation, okay? You now know numbers. Preparation, old generation, new generation. That's the book of Numbers. And the theme is?
Chastening.
Okay? Got it. That's it. You can look that up in your Webster's Dictionary later, okay? So, oddly enough, the book of Numbers, there's no words. It's all numbers. Weird. You guys have never read it, so you don't know if I'm... No. All right. What? I have my quiet time in Numbers every day. Of the sons of Joseph and Ephraim, the genealogical registration. I mean, there's some crazy stuff in here, okay? So we won't read all of it in detail, but we'll get the heart behind what God's doing, all right? So chapter 1, verse 1. Here's what's going on, okay? Now remember, Exodus 19. We've been sitting at the foot of Mount Sinai since then. So all of Exodus, Leviticus, all this has happened within an 11-month period, and that 11-month period does not end until Numbers chapter 10, okay? So lots of scripture, but chronologically, we have not covered a lot of time, okay? So just to keep that in mind. Chapter 1, verse 1, somebody read that. Okay, stop right there. Okay, so what does God tell Moses and Aaron to do? Census. Take a census or number them, hence the book of Numbers. Okay, that's brilliant. Okay, that's why it's called Numbers. Okay, ding, 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 ding. Wow, I thought it was a mystery. Yeah, okay, that's why it's called Numbers. You're going to number the people. Okay, take a census. Who are we going to number according to verse 2 and 3? You have to be a male. Okay, so a male. How old do you have to be? 20. You have to be able to go to war. Okay, and that's the idea. That's their 18, or our 18 is their 20. Okay, you have to be a fighting male. That's who we're going to count. Okay, so we're not counting women. We're not counting babies. We're not counting children. Okay, teenagers don't get counted. 20 years old and up, if you're a male, that's who we're going to count. Okay, the rest of chapter 1 is, man, here are the heads of these families, and here's each tribe and their numbers. Okay, so if you just wanted to kind of take a gander at these. Look at verse 21. They number the men of Reuben, 46,500. Okay, so that's how many fighting males the tribe of Reuben has. Okay, 46,500. You're welcome. Now you can win some Bible trivia. Okay, 23, Simeon. Okay, 25, Gad. Okay, you get all the numbers. Okay, go all the way to the end of chapter 1 and read verses 45 and 46. Actually, just read 46. How many people do we have? 603,550 fighting males, okay? So we're going to assume that for every male, there's a female, okay? So that puts us at 1.2 million at least, right? Plus chitlins, all right? We're looking at least 1.2 million people in the wilderness, okay? So kids, people under 20, there's probably quite a few, okay? So that's the rationale as to how we get our 1.2 million number. Make sense? Minimum. And that's probably just adults. Okay? Israelites. Okay? Yep. Yeah, that's not including rabble that came with them. We'll meet the rabble here in a bit. Okay? You've met them a little bit already in Exodus. Okay? That's the idea. All right? 47, who didn't get numbered?
Levi.
The Levites. They didn't number the Levites. Okay? So we get more of their duties here in 49. Okay? So as we're numbering the people, verse 50, you shall appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony and over all its furnishings and over all that belongs to it. They shall carry the tabernacle, okay? They shall take care of it, and they shall camp around the tabernacle, okay? So the Levites' job, when they, you know, up and move, their job is to take the tabernacle, the tents, the poles, the stuff inside, the stuff outside, and they're going to move it, all right? So I know it's incredibly fascinating stuff. We're looking at interior decorating and, you know, moving. You know, it's like U-Haul 101, right? So that's what they're doing, all right? So that's their job. 53 of verse, or chapter 1, the Levites shall camp around the tabernacle, the testimony, that there may be no wrath on the congregation of the sons of Israel. Okay, so if you were to look at how they camped, if you stuck the tabernacle in the middle, that is the focal point of Israel, and everybody camped around it, okay? Chapter 2 is all about where they camped, okay? So we're going to start on the east side of the tabernacle, okay? So look at chapter 2, verse 3. And this isn't necessarily important for you guys to, like, memorize or whatever, but I just wanted to get you to have a feel of how they camped in the wilderness. On the east side of the tabernacle, you get Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, Okay, so those are the three tribes that camp to the east. Okay, it goes in a big circle. Okay, so east side is Judah, Issachar, Zebulun. Okay, remember the tabernacle faces to the east, the entrance is to the east. Okay, so on the west hand side, on the far west hand side of the tabernacle, what would have been there? If you walked into the east side, what's on the far west side? Holy of Holies. Okay, so when we go to Israel and everybody prays on the western wall, the Wailing Wall, why would they be praying on that wall? It's the closest place they have to the Holy of Holies. Okay, make sense? So God says, entrance faces east, so every time you camp in the wilderness, the entrance always faces east. You set the tabernacle up like this. Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, you camp on the east side. Okay, Reuben, Simeon, Gad, south. Okay, Benjamin, Manasseh, Ephraim, west, and on the north, Naphtali, Asher, and Dan. Okay, again, not super important you know where everybody camps, but everybody has an assigned place. It's not just run in, Oklahoma land rush, throw your tent up, this is where I camp. No. There's order. This isn't chaos, okay? When I blow the shofar and I tell you guys to move, this is what happens first, this is what happens next, okay? You can imagine with 1.2 million people, it gets fairly chaotic. So they had a system, okay? And God is all about order, okay? So in case you were wondering, to write a whole book about numbers, God is very concerned about order, okay? So to a degree. Judah, I think, is the east side actually is, he's the leader of the tribes, so he's going to be the first guy that when they leave camp, he's going to lead all the tribes out. So you kind of get the idea that actually the east side is more important, okay? At least it's led by Judah, okay? So does that make sense? So that's chapter 2, all right? So that's where they camp, all right? Chapter 3, Levites, okay? This is kind of cool, and I want you guys to remember this stuff. This is this will be interesting as we kind of dive into numbers a little bit more. Specifically, the families within the tribe of Levi, they had certain jobs that they were to do, okay? 3 verse 12, read this. This is God speaking to Moses. Okay, so what is that in reference to? What did God say when they left Egypt with the Exodus? Because he redeemed every firstborn, what did he say? They're all mine. And God says, you know what, I'm not going to do that. What is he doing instead? We read this when we walked through that story. Instead of all the firstborns from every tribe, what is God saying he's going to do? I'm taking the Levites, okay? So if you are a firstborn son, how do you view the Levites? Thank you. You took my place, okay? I would be an indentured servant to God for life as a firstborn son from Reuben or Gad or Simeon or whatever. Instead, God said, I'm taking the Levites in their place. So the idea was an exaltation of the priesthood. That should be me. These guys have committed their lives to that lifestyle forever. I've got the freedom now to be a farmer or a blacksmith or whatever I want to be, okay? The Levites, not so much. This is what you're going to do. You get no land, okay? You get cities within other people's land, and this is your job for the rest of your life, okay? So that was the idea. Now, 17, verse 17. Sons of Levi, God calls, okay? Three sons, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, okay? Remember these names. Each one of these sons is going to have a family, and their family has a specific job that they do with the tabernacle, okay? So, read verse 25.
And the guard duty of the sons of Gershon in the tent of meeting involved with the tabernacle, the tent with its covering, the screen for the entrance of the tent of meeting, the hangings of the court, the screen for the door of the court that is around the tabernacle and the altar, the court, all the service connected.
So what do these guys do? When the tabernacle moved, what was their job? Specifically the Gershonites.
Guard duty.
Guard duty in what? Maybe not even guard duty, but what are they specifically taking? What does that mean? The tent, its covering, the screen doorway, the hangings. Because remember how the tabernacle was set up? All the poles, and it's like a portable tent. Their job is to take the tent and the structures, okay? So literally, that's your job. Do they touch the lampstand or the altar? No, Gershonites, you don't do that, okay? You are getting the physical structure that is the tabernacle, okay? You pack that. You see how detailed God is? That he would care about that? It's not just the Levites. He says, no, no, no. Subfamily of the Levites, Gershonites, you take this, okay? How about the Kohathites? Verse 30. 31, actually. Read that.
And their guard duty involved the ark, the table, the lampstand, the altars, the vessels of the sanctuary with which the priests minister, and the screen, all the service connected with these.
Yours is guard duty, really? Mine just says duty. Okay. Duties. Kohathites, what do you notice mentioned in there? Where do they get? The ark. Tell me about that job. Cool?
A little nerve-wracking.
Little nerve-wracking? Absolutely. Don't screw it up, okay? You don't want to be Nadab and Abihu, like, turn two. So if you're a Kohathite, what unique role do you have in the kingdom? You're going to get to carry what? The ark. Can the Gershonites do that? No. Can the Merarites do that? No. Can anybody from Reuben do that? No. I mean, you got a pretty sweet job, right? I mean, that's pretty cool when you're Indiana Jones moving through the wilderness and you're the guys with the poles on your shoulders and you're moving the ark. You prepare it, you move it, you cover it. You are in charge of the ark of God, okay? Kohathites, keep that in mind.
What's happened to the ark today? No
idea.
Quick question. Is there any indication that they had to do something ritually? Because, I mean, it would be in the Holy of Holies. We can only go in there one day a year.
God's gonna walk them through exactly what to do, okay? And he is, again, imagine God, very detailed as to what they can do, okay? So real quickly, so Gershonites, outside stuff. Kohathites, just remember, they get to take the ark and the elements of worship, okay? Table, lampstand, altars, all the utensils that are inside, the stuff we read about inside the tabernacle, that's what they take, okay? And then you get the Merarites, 36, what do they take? Frames, okay? So the Gershonites take the tent. The Merarites take the post and the pillars, okay? So they're taking the big old, I mean, these are big, strong, tough guys. Like, they're taking the telephone pole posts that are putting this thing together, okay? So, again, it's not going to change all your theology, but it's just good to understand what God's doing, okay? So that's chapter 3, who takes what, all right? We'll pick up on more of that next week, and it's to see why that is important, all right? Go. There you go. You guys have a lovely day. Enjoy your weekend. We will see you on Thursday. Come prepared to eat, okay? And we will we'll dive back into Numbers after we eat some breakfast and hang out for a bit. All right? Peace to you. Is it?